Yes, hi everybody. Kay Thompson here. Welcome to Kay Thompson Live. I'm Kay Thompson. And boy, do we have a show on tonight. We are going to be talking to Byron Saunders. You know, he's a art historian. He's been on with us before, and he's an arts and management consultant. And also Wayne Gilman will be calling in, and we're going to have a really exciting show because of the fact that we're going to be talking about Trump. His inauguration? Is it inauguration? When is it? Tomorrow? 2 weeks? Oh, boy. 2 days? Oh, boy. I'm telling you. That's exhausting even to think about, much less, have to live with for about a couple of years or so. But anyway, we are going to be talking to Wayne and then Byron, and they are calling in. I think Byron is just calling in right now. Byron, hello. Hello, Byron Saunders.
Good evening, Kay. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Well, it's another blessed day in paradise, as I say. However, we know paradise is going to be challenged by the end of this week.
Oh, my goodness gracious. What is the word out there with other people in New York and other places, Byron, about Trump? How are they dealing with this? I'm having a lot of trouble with it.
I am too, and I know some Republicans who happen to be African American, and they of course are touting the wait and see kind of situation because they believe their president elect is going to make a difference. Well, and then of course right now I would say there are more in New York City. Who is, of course, this is Hillary Clinton territory. And even though Donald Trump is in New York from Queens, I don't see a lot of New York people really supporting the president.
I think we have Wayne Gilman on the phone. I want to get him in on this. Wayne, are you there?
Huh? Hi, good evening, Kay.
How are you?
All right. I recognize that voice. I don't know who. I didn't get a chance to hear who you had as a guest this evening.
Yeah, that's Byron. I think we lost.
Yeah.
Byron.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Hello,
all right.
Wayne.
How you doing?
Wayne.
I didn't.
You?
I said I'm. Yeah. I recognize his voice. I just couldn't picture who it was at first. How you doing?
Well, as I was sharing with Kay in her opening question, I'm doing fine. I'm anticipating the circus. One is closing. Ringling Brothers Bonner and Bailey Circus is closing, and then there's another one that's coming into office that's called the President of the United States.
It's
so
gonna rain that day.
See,
I hope you have your body armor.
Well, that's fine, but we're going to see what the elephant. We're going to see how the elephant performs, right? GOP.
I don't know why we're laughing. Listen, you two. I don't know why we're laughing because I'm really worried about this.
It's serious.
Donald Trump of the United States really has me worried. There's so much damage he can do, and destroy. He can destroy what Barack Obama has put in place. And so,
it's true. Yeah, you know, Kay, what's really disturbing, Kay and Wayne, is the nominees for his cabinet. It's one thing to have an individual who we all can point to and say he's not competent or qualified. But then you start to hear the questions being posed to the educational secretary, to the labor secretary, to all of the secretaries who will be sitting at that table and hearing their responses, which is really indicating they are truly not qualified to be in the positions that they're being placed in. And in my opinion, and this is something the GOP has been doing since 2008 and even before, rendering the federal government totally dysfunctional so that it would become apparent that our government is in failure so that we can engage, going back to this issue for which the education director or secretary was implying states rights. And we, folks, Civil War taught us a lesson. And they got to go back to that particular defeat, because the South, as we all know, would today tell you it wasn't about slavery. It was about states' rights. Well, guess what? The federal government's authority over all states was engaged when the South lost the war,
mm-hmm.
period.
I agree. I tell you, but the thing is that the Republicans don't seem to realize that they are now in charge and they represent all of us. You know,
yes.
And it's everything in the contiguous United States that basically, you know, regardless of whether they felt that we supported him or not, the fix is in. We have to accept what is going on, but we should not have to scale back on whatever it is that whatever gains that we have made just to appease, you know, what they want. You know, because as you just pointed out, they have already shown their defiance where they would stop government. You know, they would not even pass a federal budget, and they would shut the whole system down just to prove a point. We have to be just as defined and adamant about the things that we need, you know, and the things that we want. You know, I'm curious to see. And the other thing that really bothers me about him, I have a plan about Obamacare. Come out and tell us what it is. You know, if you're going to improve the system, and there needs to be some tinkering here and there done, but come out. Don't, you know, I'm on a budget. I'm retired. I'm on a fixed income. I want to know what it is that I'm up against. You know, I don't believe in the element of surprise, and I don't think most Americans feel that way. You know?
Well, you better get used to an element for surprise, because I don't really think he has any plans in mind, really, because we wouldn't hurt him by now. You know? I said if we weren't worried before, we should really get worried, because this is some serious stuff. You know, for him to go into office as president of the United States does not make any sense. And now he's against, one of the icons. You know, who is it? John, what's his name again? John Lewis. One of the oldest freedom fighters. What is Trump talking about? Okay, and he's just being very guilty, and I'm really disgusted with him. So at first, it was funny, but it's no longer funny. This is real, and it's going to change everything. You watch.
You have a point there, Kay, and with respect to the congressman in the 5th congressional district, we have to still remind people he was and still is the duly elected representative of the 5th congressional district, which means he sits at the table as well as has a vote in the legislative Congress to make sure that the programs that come into his district are going to serve his constituents. And when you're attacking the delegate duly elected, it shows, I don't care what Trump thinks and the other everybody else thinks, but it shows to his constituents that he has no regard whatsoever for their representative. That's dangerous.
He doesn't have a clue. He really doesn't have a clue what's going on. It is something that is so, it's just scary, because no one knows exactly what's going to happen, and the people are wondering how is the government going to function. You know, he is so lacking in knowledge. I don't even think he really even wanted to know. I think he wanted to set up things the way he wanted to set up things, like some sort of business that would make money, period, with him as the king. All right?
Yes.
But the king has to close.
Well, I can't wait for the Republicans to get sick and tired of what's going on, because he's already running things as if it's a dictatorship. You know? I mean, I saw that news conference last week, and I was just so taken back by his behavior. And the way he treats the press, with a lack of a modicum amount of respect. If he feels that there's somebody, the fact that he would spend half his time tweeting, this bully pulpit all of a sudden that he has, that he could turn around and just do as he says, you know, and it doesn't matter. Sooner or later, he's going to have to account for something, you know? And sooner or later, he's going to need the press. He's not going to – you just can't depend on your advisors to deliver the message. You were elected to handle a certain amount of responsibility on your own, you know? It's not like, you know, you're there from Monday through Friday, and then on the weekends you're just going to take the time off and just go to the golf course and play, you know?
Yeah.
This is a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week job.
There was something else very dangerous that's going on, and I don't know if you have been paying attention to this, but Donald Trump, president-elect, has requested the head of the National Guard in Washington, D.C., at 12:01 during his election swearing-in ceremonies to resign from his post. This is unprecedented. In addition to having all of the ambassadors who were appointed under the Obama administration to send in their resignation, and
exactly.
I got to tell you, I went to a military academy, and I got to tell you, the first way you a general or a dictator engages in a coup d'etat is to dismiss the military that's been loyal to the government. And I got to tell you,
yeah.
That's very, very frightening.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I mean, I just wonder how many people are just going to continue to allow this to play out and for how long, you know? I really don't understand it. I heard your governor today, and I say that, you know, jokingly, the New Jersey governor talking about, you know, how he is not interested in taking on a Washington job because his wife doesn't want to move to Washington. Well, why is it that you ran for the presidency if you knew your wife didn't want to move to Washington? You know? It's like so sophomoric, and then he feels, you know, and then they all have a standard line about John Lewis and that controversy, and that we need to rally around the president because the Democrats did this back in 2000 when Bush won. And even the Bushes have a completely different spin, especially the drubbing that Jeb Bush took. Their whole outlook on this thing, they're just going through the perfunctory motion of showing up to show that there's unity in the country. But beyond that, that's it. It's just a perfunctory motion that all elected officials, past presidents particularly, will do when there's a new inauguration. But other than that, you know, not everybody is in lockstep with what he's doing, and I just think it's a matter of time. It's just total chaos, and that's it. As you said, to have every diplomat's resignation on the table, every person who represents this country, just because they got that position with the previous administration, instead of allowing them a weeding out process if you want to make certain changes because you're politically in charge, you know, it just doesn't seem to add up at all. It's crazy.
I had a chance to listen to Rachel Maddow's commentary this week about last week. You know, Wayne, you asked a question about who's pulling Donald Trump's strings. And it becomes even more apparent that the strings that are being pulled are the energy moguls, Exxon in particular, as our new Secretary of State, will be engaging in a massive deal that was put on hold as a result of the sanctions put on by the Obama administration after Russia invaded the Ukraine. That oil deal was a huge oil deal between Exxon and the Russian-run energy gas agency. And it was put on hold because of the sanctions. And now that we have the new Secretary of State coming in who is running Exxon, who was in cahoots with Putin on that deal, but here's something else. And something in my spider sense was tingling, and I had at that point, I said, wait a minute, this rings of something well beyond just the deal. And
exactly.
I Googled the who and what relationship was Libya in regards to the oil industry, and it when I Googled it, what came up that Moscow had a very important relationship to all Libyan oil relationships, and with removing Gaddafi was important because Gaddafi wanted to move all the African oil nations off of the OPEC dollar and onto the gold standard. Now, you start to connect the dots, Moscow, Exxon, Libya, and the ruse that the Republicans threw up in our face was Benghazi. Think about it. Connect the dots, because the hiding of Benghazi, the death of the ambassador, the assassination of Gaddafi now removed the one linchpin that was engaging Exxon, Moscow, and African oil-producing nations. It is unbelievable. It is so deep in a conspiracy that it's too unbelievable to not be real, okay? And that's like, okay, now I get it. Who's pulling Trump strings? It's the oil energy-producing nations who are part of OPEC.
And it's interesting because all of a sudden now there was a lull in activity in terms of the price of oil, and now as he approaches the presidency and he's going to be largely in charge, I don't know if you notice, I don't know if you drive, Byron, but the deal is that there's been a slight uptake in the price of gas. They're talking about home heating oil after a while is going to go back. The guy that he wants as energy secretary has no interest in global warming whatsoever.
Right.
Yes.
Hey, you know. Guys, can you hear me? This is Eric.
Hey, hi, how you doing, Eric?
Okay, good. I'm sorry I'm a little late to the conversation. Yeah,
I'm getting
time
an echo.
Yeah, but take care of that. This is the first time, last time I'm going to be on the air with the current president, Barack Obama. Hold on for one second. Can we try this?
Let me just see now.
All right, how's that? Is that a little bit better? You still getting the echo?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay,
oh, yeah.
Great. So, this is the last time we're going to all we're gonna be. I just wanted to point that out. Last time we're going to be on the air with Barack Obama as president of the United States. And just to chime into what you were saying about the confirmation hearings, Byron and Wayne about the energy guy. And also I was particularly interested in the gentleman who's caught up. His name slips me now, the doctor, who's going to be running an agency, who's caught up in the buying the stocks.
Right.
One in the market. Who is that? Can you guys help me?
I know who you're talking about.
I can't think
of the name off the top of my head.
Just my memory at the current time. I'm going to try and look him up real quick. But, yeah, I mean, Trump, all of his confirmation hearings and all of his people, they all have conflicts, which is, unbelievable. When you think about it, you know?
Well, what's unbelievable is that they're so blatant and arrogant about, you know, it doesn't matter to them. You know, it's almost like as if they are somewhat dismissive of the legislative process in order to be appointed, secretaries in his cabinet. It doesn't matter to them what influential ties or what investments they may have. You know, the fact that Donald Trump himself feels he's immune to everything because there's no conflict of interest law that would impede his ability to, as he said, he could run his country and run his businesses at the same time. You know, there's this cavalier. I don't even want to say it's a New York attitude. The man has just lost his mind. you know, in my opinion. and the thing is that I don't know what will happen next, what's going to come out of his mouth with respect to anything. He gets on the tube and he constantly tells members of the press and people that he does interviews with that he's given all of his appointees, cabinet appointees, free rein to speak their minds, you know, don't hold back. And I know that there will come a time where he'll be disappointed by something that's being said, and there'll be a tweet about that. You know, he's too thin-skinned to have this job. I can't fathom that in fewer than 48 hours we're going to be ruled by this imbecile. I said it.
Right. he's really.
You know, I'm trying to be respectful, but I go back to Central Park. I go back to all sorts of issues that happen locally here, his opinion about people of color, the disrespect he had for a reporter, it's just, where do you draw the line with this guy?
One of his people, his cabinet people that I found one of the names of Betsy DeVos, the woman who's going to be Secretary of Education, who really is clueless in regards to education.
Oh, boy.
She was being questioned today by Al Franken about what some things she thought about real basic kind of educational theories and, I guess, concepts and beliefs, and she was kind of clueless. And, just the clips they've been showing, but one senator was asking her what she thought about schools, if she thought it was good to have guns in schools, and, you know, the political answer that some of these people had to give, you know, she went on some long description, explanation about, you know, well, she supposes that in one school in rural Montana, they had a gun for in case of a grizzly bear. But, you know, some of these people, when you see them getting questioned for these committee, for these appointments, it's almost like they turn dumb, you know. It's like they don't know anything because they're trying so hard. That's the one thing that just struck me about watching this clip about her. They're trying so hard not to say the wrong thing.
To be something she's not.
And to, all of them are trying to be something that they're not. And just answer the questions the exact same way. Because they're trying not to give anybody any reason to vote against their nomination, which is a crazy thing. But these people are so diametrically opposed, a complete 180-degree turn to what Barack Obama was trying to do and the direction he was trying to take our country. And it's really ridiculous. I mean, Trump, as you guys know, Trump is entering his inauguration, the lowest rated president in history.
Well,
it's true.
I can't bring myself to say that I'm actually going to watch that spectacle, when it occurs. I'm so glad it's going to rain now. I just feel, it's like even the laws of nature somehow are influencing what's about to take place here. And I just think that having had 8 years of such an excellent, eloquent, educated, even-tempered, even in the face of adversity, this man stood still, and he emerges from this without, a blemish. His family walks out of the White House Friday without no stains of extracurricular activity on the part of a maid or, nothing. I mean, it's just that we're witnessing, and I know that historians have not gone as far as to say it, but one of the best presidencies that we've ever lived through, at least I know in my lifetime, And maybe I'm biased because of the racial thing, but I think that they're well-meaning, educated white folks who get it, and they're astounded by the level of decadence that we're getting into.
Wait, where are they? The well-meaning white people. Look,
They're out there. I mean, some of them voted. I'm not saying that. The problem is not enough of them voted to. Because there's some who believe this guy can walk on water. He's an entertainment figure, and Of course, they allowed Ronald Reagan, who was like a B actor, you know, become president one day. So I guess they feel that, why not him? You know, he's got
all sorts
of business connections.
You know one thing, Wayne, we are in a real pickle here, okay? Because here we have someone who doesn't know what he's doing, and he's surrounded himself with other people who don't know or don't understand how to run a government. So
it's not even so much that they don't understand, Kay. I think they understand, but they all have respective agendas. Everyone he's picked has an agenda.
They don't understand what it is to run a government. Period. Or else we would see some semblance of it. It is really so annoying, and you just sit here and you're angry because the fact that you have a person who was like, what, a TV star, a very, very, very wealthy TV star, you know, who's going to be president of the United States, president of the world,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you sit here with anger and with, you know, utter amazement at the, you know, the majority of the people, not the majority of the people, but great numbers of the people very impressed with this person. And you have another Barack Obama who set things in place. You know, who was really he did 8 years. That goes to show you that we had a president who knew what he was doing and who was trying to change and put everything in place for the country. I am so annoyed about it. I can even hardly talk about it, you know.
Well,
I don't know what's going to be happening, and we're going to be seeing the birther thing. He still talks himself that stupid stuff.
Does he? Because I thought he admitted that. I mean, I wouldn't be in the least bit surprised.
He goes back and forth.
I mean, I'm not shocked by that at all, you know. I'm so tired of just the blatant disrespect that he has for anyone other than people who agree with him. You know, I still don't understand the whole Steve Harvey business. You know, that was like the Jim Brown. You know, I mean, Martin Luther King III showed up on King Day and he had an agenda. I'm not saying that probably other, you know, well-meaning and progressive blacks and people of color who've met with him with an agenda just to make sure that even Cuomo today, and it's one of the things I worry about because New York State, unlike many other states, is so intricately, it's just so tied financially to the federal government with social programs. The city of New York, I'm going to have to tell you, we have a huge homeless problem here, you know. But Cuomo's trying to rebuild the, after all these years, what many other elected officials failed to do by trying to improve the infrastructure. And maybe Trump may throw a bone because he's a native New Yorker. But, you know, Cuomo is representative, one of many people in a position of government, state government, that this man has to answer to. And, you just can't get anything out of him other than, you know, false promises that have not been delivered, you know? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, Wayne, real quick, Byron, I don't know if you're still on the line.
Yes.
Okay.
It looked like your call dropped for a second. All right. No, I just wanted to double check that. Wayne, I didn't mean to interrupt your point, but if you're finished, I wanted to make
No, go ahead. I wasn't trying to dominate. It's just that I'm so angry and frustrated, but it is what it is.
Yeah, but I think that obviously we've the larger take a step back. I mean, I kind of as during the course of my life, as I've been my proximity to politics and to watching the American society and politics and things and just the world and growing up, I've noticed that. Really, it's about, even though the masses and we as a people have been catching hell probably all the globe over, but there's always there's also a larger game, and I'm sure Byron, you're as being as much of a historian as you are, there's a larger game being played, a larger perspective about how, you know, initially about how America was conquered and developed as a country, the whole story of America. You know, these people come to this country and are just looking for a place to live, and they have to battle the odds, the savage natives that live here, and, you know, their benevolence and slavery. Slavery was supposed to be a natural thing. So United States, to me, there's a certain amount of a facade to it. I mean, you know, there's a real ruling class, and there's a real class of people who kind of whose decisions and whose influence affects the direction of this country more than the average person on the street, obviously, right? The populace. You know, we talk about the ruling
class. Well, you're right. You're right, because remember the way the country formed were the land owners, the gentry. You're right.
Right.
It did. These were the people who put together the founding fathers were landowners. They were slave owners. They put together a nation based on an agenda, and yes, some that was very altruistic in its founding construct of being a nation of equality, of voting, of a populism that was supposed to be the rejection of the British rule. And yes, the wars that were fought, both the Indian Wars, the Revolutionary War, and you're right, every step along the way, including all the way up to 1776 and the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, each and every one of those steps along the way, they had to struggle with the notion of, one, slavery, two, an industrialized nation that was beginning to realize in the industrial industry and complex. It was a new idea, a new concept, and then how to merge the agrarian South and the landowners who were the agrarian growing and populace to work with this new concept of industry. You know,
right.
cities that were hiring people to work in manufacturing. Remember, manufacturing is a turn of the century concept, and so we're coming
right
out of that Victorian period into this new industrial concept, which then began to hire cheap labor. So cheap labor moving forward in a capitalistic system, and this is one of the things you have to remember. Pope Francis the other day said, capitalism is the scourge of the earth, and he has it right because it's all based on cheap labor and slavery. So we have the unions to try to establish some kind of guidelines and protection, but what has happened is that class warfare that's been ongoing, as we have seen this in the last 8 years, 10 years, 15 years, the breakdown of the unions, and who have they been attacking? Most importantly, is they've been attacking teachers' union, the garbage workers, the police unions, all the unions that are there to protect the labor. And this is what the Koch brothers and even Trump, why do they not want a new minimum wage? It's because it's going to take more money out of their greed to not allow the nation itself to grow together with them, so that 1% is shrinking. It's shrinking even further.
And doing the top half of the 1%, and that's what I'm talking about. That,
yes.
Everything else, as far as those guys are concerned, are the cogs in the wheel that turns their dollars, that makes their dollars, right? So it's like you said, the long-term plan, they begin to, you know, like when they began to attack the unions and how they, you know, how they spin the whole image of the unions of being preventing people from being able to work, or, you know, the whole thing, the issue in California a few years ago when Barack Obama was running for re-election, and in California there was a thing that the union members' dues be allowed to go towards a political donation.
The PAC.
And the way the Republicans had the way the Republican backers of this particular proposition to cut that out was the way they were spinning it was that the union automatically, you know, make these contributions and they automatically take money from the union members regardless of whether they want to or not, which wasn't the case. But that's how they begin to spin a negative narrative about the unions, about all these things that are more of a populist and community and labor-based and spreading wealth out and opportunities and jobs and allowing people to live in a living wage and have a living wage. And like you said, Byron, you know, they don't want to pay that money. So they begin to, you know, after a few years, you know, right about now as we're rolling on to this election, the union, the image of a union is totally different now than when it first started. as a resource for collective bargaining for people. So I'm saying, you
and
know, their plan, and as you know, the Republicans' plan, they have, like, long-term plans. You know how they set out, just like they set out a few years ago, 10, 20, 30 years ago, to control all the state legislatures across the country.
Yes.
Therefore, attacking the voting rights and coming up with these voting laws. But, you know, they're methodical about that. And the Democrats, what we don't have on our side is that kind of perspective and that diligence and that discipline. And also, you know, we kind of like to flash a little bit. Everybody comes out for the presidential elections, but then don't come out for the midterm elections, you know, which they claim is going
on. Right. The other thing that we have to really be conscious of is, in addition to the wealth differentiation between the classes, is that our nation spends 66 and two-thirds of every dollar collected on taxes is going to a defense department. So when you add that to the notion of the top half of the 1% and you look at his cabinet members, I can guarantee you that each one of their portfolios financially is tied into defense industry contracts. And with that said, means that if you start to whittle down the defense amount of money starting to move into social programs where they, like the food stamp program, one half of 1% of the budget is actually a food stamp program, and yet you're spending 66 2/3% on a war-fueled economy. Now, translate that to the NRA, the gun manufacturing, and even the terrorists are buying their weapons from manufacturers in the United States. That's the insanity of it all, is that here we are against ISIL and Al-Qaeda and all the wars that we're fighting, but their weapons are coming from manufacturers made in the USA. That's
yep.
the insanity that we're up against. And then you talk about the guns in Chicago. My goodness, it's so easy to get a gun these days, all right? So ultimately, the conflict that America is going to have to come to grips with, and it's going to be a constitutional battle. We already know what's on the agenda, but do we have the guts of the legislators to acknowledge the rule of law and the Constitution that is supposed to be protecting the constituents? And that's the challenge that we're going to be up against in this next, with this new administration.
Yeah.
You know, Byron, you said so many different – you hit on so many different topics that are
– right.
You know, they're all critical to our, you know, existence. I just wonder what is the elixir at this point, because I just see the horse out of the barn in so many different instances. Yeah. You know, I mean, we do have a capitalist system. I'm not sure if socialism will work. You know, but I also
These guys are global capitalists, and there's no allegiance to country for them. Their perspective. That's why Donald Trump sided with Putin, and that's why Tillerson is Putin's boy.
I understand that.
And
the thing is that you're absolutely right. There's a collusion there between them, and this is what I was trying to refer. I was alluding to earlier when I was. Talking about agendas when I, you know, was addressing Kay, everybody
right.
that he has appointed has a particular agenda, but it doesn't seem to be anything
exactly.
that is genuinely of interest to the American populace as a whole. You know,
well,
it's almost like as if I took over this company, I'm going to bring my boys in. You know,
exactly.
I want to make
That's
sure. And the government doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
And
that's his perspective. And also, too, you keep the populace ignorant, right? You keep
yeah.
the ignorant populace. And who was it saying about the Electoral College, how bad it was? I mean, it's a story. So the populace, I mean, people elected him are ignorant. People don't really understand the educational level of people to understand the workings of government and then the complex issues that are at stake. The average person, these people aren't understanding. These are people that hate Obamacare, but now they love it. So much, or they don't, you know, they're the same type of individuals that talk bad about socialism and don't realize that Medicare, Social Security is a kind of a social, based in a socialism type theory program.
Yeah.
So So when you're dealing with that base, that populace at the very base, then they can be swayed very easy. That's what I'm talking. That's what I'm saying. There's a you know, the runnings and the way the country is really running the world has very little. The average person has very little knowledge with having a say so in that, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, right. And the other thing that we need to really be conscious of, Wayne and Eric and Kay, is that the lobbying efforts by corporate mm-hmm. America has such a profound impact on our political process.
Exactly.
That legislators these days don't even write their own legislation. There are groups out there like the Koch brothers who are actually writing the legislation and in conferences paid for by them to
by
bring
them,
these
exactly.
legislators into a room and say, here's the document we want you to take to the floor of the Congress and have voted on. So these elected officials, many of them, especially in the Tea Party, and many of the Republicans, and some in the Democrats, they're not even writing their own legislation any longer. They are being paid by lobbyists.
That's largely
Absolutely.
The problem. If you could eliminate them from the Washington, D.C. scene, I'm certain there'd be a lot of vacant apartments down there.
Oh, absolutely. Because we grew up with great statesmen. Now, one of the things I got to say about growing up in Washington, D.C., I've been through Presidents Eisenhower through now. So I understand the game, the power of the politics that's being played, because that's all that's there. And there was a point, even back in the 50s, 60s, where we had great legislators, whether you hated them or loved them, but they played the game the way it's supposed to be played.
Right.
Now, mm-hmm. These people have no concept whatsoever. They got dollars running out their pockets, and they're ultimately being pushed by the lobbying industry to vote on their behalf, not the general public or the citizenry who elected them, but being paid directly to vote for the capitalists who are buying their ticket. Period.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's the whole concept of turning the whole – you talk about playing the game and the politics and understanding the workings. Trump, it's the whole concept of turning everything on its head. You know, there's no reference or deference for procedure and tradition. At least there was a facade, you know. At least there was a facade of statesmanship, and that these people are actually doing for the general good, for the common man. You know, they had the FDRs, the Two Deals, the Harry Trumans. At least there was that facade that the average working, at least the average working American, white American at that time, had a pretty good, life. And now these guys, like you were saying, they come in there. There's no adherence to even presenting the facade. Like, you know, the whole concept of bringing everybody together and we're gonna, you know, the country going forward. I mean, Trump's whole campaign was something of negative and doom and gloom. So his concept, he's even said it, I think, that, you know, it's kind of like a war. You know, to the victor go the spoils. And to have that kind of mentality of a guy who's elected in a peaceful transition of power, but to still have the mentality to, like, he almost has that mentality. I'm the victor, and I'm going to have the spoils, and I'm going to do what I want. And you know, if people don't like it, it's almost like a dictatorship or an emperor, the way this guy is operating a little bit to a certain degree.
From a humanistic concept, the other thing that's very disturbing is that we have now are witnessing a nation where bullying is the way this game is played. And unfortunately, that's going to translate into fascism. It will translate itself into a militaristic concept, because once again, those who are in power make their money from the war effort, and the war effort commands and demands bullying. And it's trickling down from the Oval Office down to the PlayStation, and we have unfortunately are engaging in a rise in domestic violence, a rise in playground violence, a rise in competition on the football field. It's all violence. everything, every
yeah,
TV
right.
show we've got. We've got the wrestling shows that used to be at least WWF was as phony and fake as it gets. But now you go into the Octagon Arena, and these guys are killing each other. So
yeah.
we are literally engaging and feeding, force feeding our public with too much violence. And as a result, it is now impacting on every level of our society. We're in dangerous territory here, folks, and it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, well, I mean, I hate to think that way, and, you know, you have every right to say what you're saying, and I tell you, I applaud those people like our former mayor, Michael Bloomberg, who started a campaign to get the guns off the street. I mean,
yeah.
more of us need to be, more of those who are in a position of power should be basically heeding his call on a national level, nationwide, you know, to get people to do something about it. It's just unfortunate, you know, how things are going. And you know, you tied a very interesting nexus there earlier when you mentioned the key, how these operatives, elements of ISIS, are fighting Americans and people who support, you know, those members of NATO who support the American cause with our own weaponry that was sold, you know, to these governments in a bid for the almighty dollar. And,
yes.
you know, again, when you look at what goes on in the streets, Chicago, a classic example. I understand there's some localities in the country, I believe in Louisiana, where the crime is, the shootings in that particular state are far worse than what's going on in the city of Chicago, you know? And it's just people. It just, it's unfathomable, you know? But what are you going to do? I mean, when does it stop?
Wayne,
how many lives must be lost?
And then when you compound that, not just the weapon problems, now the crumbling of our infrastructure is even more disturbing, because at the point at which that we now, our bridges, our roads, the water systems, that do you realize the lead in water in Washington, D.C. is in dangerous level in those public schools? Every major city across our country where African Americans and people of color, the water systems are tainted with lead. And the value of and the disturbing part about that is when you understand the level of the pipeline of the educational system to the prison industrial complex, there is a cause effect relationship, because those children who are impacted by lead poisoning end up being in that system.
Well,
that
the sad
dangerous.
Part about it, Byron, is that there's some probably well-meaning, educated white folks who are caught up in the same problems, too, you know, because, you know, I mean, when you're poisoning the entire system, like in the city of New York, you know, I mean, it's very easy. I don't know who monitors and basically, I know there's a regulatory agency that does that, but, you know, there's a lot that slips through the cracks, and you just wonder, well, why? And it's unfortunate. I don't know if you had a chance to ride the Second Avenue subway the other day.
Haven't
since it's open.
Voted yet.
Because I know you live in New York. You know, and I
right.
and you talk about the crumbling infrastructure. It took 100 years to alleviate the overcrowding on the east side of Manhattan by putting this line in, and it only went three stops to the edge of Spanish Harlem. And I'm just saying the entire city should be benefiting. You know, years ago when they were building the rapid transit system here, you know, they just didn't wait 10, 15 years and let a generation go by before they, you know, they worked on it constantly, you know?
Yeah.
There are jobs
yeah.
to be had here for that.
Yeah,
but,
that's the bureaucracy. That's the bureaucracy of it, Wayne, you know? I mean, it's got to go through the bureaucracy and then – inherent in that, you're going to have people who drag their feet. You're going to have people, human beings. You're going to have people who might be tempted to exploit opportunities. So, I mean, you know, programs like that taking a long time when you consider all those things is not surprising. And also, just a note about, I want to make a comment about what Byron is saying about the infrastructure. I think I don't know whether the lead system being in all of these communities was intentional. We know that the urban areas are very old. Most of the cities are old because that's
yeah.
where, you know, they were populated initially. And it's part of, I think it's more part of the crumbling infrastructure that, you know, now, you know, like they say, a lot of the bridges and all these things need to be reinforced, restored, rebuilt, tore down.
Mm-hmm.
Because after 50, 100 years, now these pipes and now all the infrastructure, we have it crumbling now. I think the element of prejudice might come in terms of deciding where the dollars go in terms of how they address those particular problems. I think that might be a tinge of racism somewhere inherent.
Oh, it is. No question.
In that decision-making, you know, every time you have something that's subjective, decisions that are subjective to individuals, obviously their biases are going to come into effect in determining the value of certain things, problems, right?
Eric, you're absolutely right, because now let's go to the urban areas. Every city has what is known as the Central Business District, CBD. Every city Central Business District was designed, especially where you have capitals in each of the states and in the big cities, they were designed to bring industry and trade into the city to sustain the lifestyles of those needed to live in the city. Now, when white flight and integration took place, those central business districts and the money that was originally allocated for the ongoing repair of the infrastructure itself based on tax dollars collected, that money was systematically drained to go develop suburbs, which then drew the white flight then out to the suburbs, leaving the inner city with nothing to sustain itself. So now that the gas prices have gotten so high, now we have gentrification, because at this point the white flight can't sustain itself in the suburbs because energy prices are too high and it's impossible to continue to live out there and still work in the cities.
Exactly.
So now,
and
the
urban areas,
you're right,
now
it's the urban areas. That's right. And so now we are being confronted with a reality check that took 20, 30, 40 years since the 50s and since the raising in the sun, you know, to really understand that concept drained the city so that Detroit would fall. Philadelphia's infrastructure is in trouble. New York's infrastructure is in trouble. Chicago's infrastructure is in trouble. Every major city has had to be confronted with this because there's no monies in the central business district to sustain
mm-hmm.
the city's growth and development. And you're right.
And
race played a part of it.
And what would have been a good thing, because once again, the people who are losing out the most as people are rediscovering and gentrification is happening and buying
yeah.
up properties in downtown areas and turning them into lofts and pricing out
yes.
the poor people who were stuck there initially, who are still stuck there, but now they're getting priced out and forcing either to lose their home, move away, or whatever, and the cycle is just repetitive. What would have been
yes.
nice if at that time when those property value had gone down and everybody had run out of the city, if those blacks and those people could have pooled their resources or purchased those properties, and now all these years later, be able to benefit a profit from now selling these properties back as these people want to move back in and pay top dollar, you know?
Yeah,
so
right.
I'm seeing there's buildings, I mean, that's in the perfect world, right?
You
raise an interesting point, Eric, because, I mean, not to put my family's business out in the street, but I'm sort of faced with a situation like that now. But I see the importance of holding on. I don't want to see where a whole community that was once entirely black come back without a certain element of diversity. I don't want to feel that my dad or mom was a custodian for 60-some-odd years and then all of a sudden the neighborhood's rediscovered, like how Columbus discovered America. And they feel that there's a sense of entitlement that well, you know, you all had your time, move out now, and that's it. And I could pay X, Y, and Z for whatever. I could see if you're behind in your taxes or your insurance is not paid, or we'll come up with some little machination to unload whatever it is that you have, you know?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what they've been doing. That's what they thrive on. And that's what I'm saying. It's unfortunate that there's only a few folks like you and your family. I have a friend in Brooklyn that comes to mind whose family did the same thing. They own their brownstone. They're obviously, you know, when you go in these communities, people that aren't from the communities will find, you know, you hear stories about Bed-Stuy, Brooklyn, or Harlem and stuff. The average person, or I guess in the flyover, they don't know that these communities have been solvent for years and are very populated by a number of middle-class people who will live in the city, living, you know, like Harlem. You know, you go to Sugar Hill or Brooklyn, you go to Fort Greene,
right,
or various other places. There's a lot of middle-class economic black people that live and own their own homes, own these brownstones, own these buildings. But they're not as – the number is not as great. Obviously, the percentage is not as great. So the majority of folks end up, like you said, Wayne, there's a loophole. They either owe back taxes or the mortgage or something, some way that the folks that are doing the buying with the money are able to get that property. And the only ones that are benefiting
and very often
are
it's even our own ignorance, because I think that's the wonderful thing about Barack Obama, what he did, is that certain programs were set up. If you don't know what to do and you need to salvage whatever it is you have, there may be an opportunity where perhaps something could be worked out. But a lot of us, you know, we remain in an information vacuum, you know, or sometimes they wait too long and it's too late, you know. And it just saddens me to see that happen. And, you know.
A lot of people don't know. Those are the type of programs that a presidency, a Democratic, liberal Democrat president can put in. Those are infrastructure type issues that they can deal with and take those obstacles away. It's kind of like, you know, the student loan situation that he helped them to make better, you know, the exorbitant fees. Those are things that help the working class, help the populace, you know, the most number of people, that take away these exorbitant fees on student loans. When that happens, so more people are able to get educated because now they can afford college, you know. And so I think slowly, generationally, unfortunately, you have to wait generations for some of those programs like that, provided that the Republicans don't come in and reverse that type of program. You know, that's the things that can eventually help lift up the society as a whole. But, you know, when you constantly have these roadblocks being thrown in the way by the opposition, you know, it tends to take 20, 30 years.
Exactly.
You know?
Sad, you know?
Yeah.
I said, I don't look forward to Friday at all. And I don't know of anyone that I, at this point, who feels, you know, just the opposite, except those who voted for him and happen to share in that agenda.
Yeah, I would suppose. Go ahead, Byron. You wanted to say, rewind it down. You wanted to say real quick, Byron?
Yeah, I was just going to say that given this honeymoon routine that we will dance with, they say it's usually it's the first 100 days. I don't give it 30 days because the impact
they didn't give Obama no honeymoon.
They didn't. And see, and that's the tricky part about treason is this. If you have signed on to obstruct a federal agency and your boss on the first day that he takes office. That's right, because at the point at which ultimately, see, treason has been something that's been ongoing for quite some time. Obstruction is not
10 seconds. You get ready to get deep. 10 seconds. You got 10 seconds.
10 seconds. So, folks, let's pay attention because there's more stuff to hit the fan, okay?
We're gonna pick that conversation up next week because you started opening up a can of worms that we can't really wrap up. But I want to say thanks to Byron Saunders for joining the show on the Kate Thompson Live Show. Thanks, Byron. Talk to you next week.
Yes, indeed.
All right, thank you.
Thanks,
and Wayne Gilman, once again, it's been real, Mr. Gilman.
All right, hang in there. Look forward to the turbulence.
We have to buckle in. All right. Thank you, Wayne Gilman.
The person running from the turbulence is Lynch.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Kate Thompson Live Show. You can listen to the show every Wednesday evening, every Wednesday live, 8 to 9 p.m., and it's also archived. I am the son, Eric Payne, and you are the
I am Kate Thompson.
Join us every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. here on Kay Thomason Live, Blog Talk Radio.